The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of Natural Bridges Media or KSQD's staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Welcome to What a Week, KSQD's Listener's Digest of all the news from this last week that you really need to know. I'm Tony Russomano.
And I'm Eric Nelson, and have we got a show for you.
Now, you can't be well informed unless you are informed well. And that's where What a Week comes in.
For the next hour, we're going to dive deep into what's been going on over the last 7 days, giving you a quick rundown of what's happening here in Santa Cruz and in the rest of the world.
And because sometimes you just want to get away from it all, we'll play you some music designed to soothe your soul and bring a smile to your face.
So turn up that radio, fire up that internet browser, and get ready for another edition of KSQD's What a Week.
So by my count, Tony, approximately 200 What a Weeks until the next election.
Ooh, can't wait.
Yeah, I just thought who's keeping score as we in our metaphorical prison cells as we cross out the days.
You had a good time last week in my absence. I was listening to that music show. It was very enjoyable. I was listening. Yes, you were correct. I was in my pajamas. I was sleeping very late.
Oh, I thought you'd be stumbling about your home, but actually sleeping, that's good.
Well, I was, you know, snoozing with my little new doggy by my side.
So what did we miss in the last couple of weeks? Oh, there was, well, the tornado in Scotts Valley. There's And, well, peer pressure. Get it? Peer pressure. We lost 100 feet of our pier last week very dramatically, and assorted construction equipment, which is now a deep underwater, and made the national news, front page of the New York Times, or the New York Slimes, I should get in my Trumpian speak here, and democracy dies in darkness, the Washington Post, we were in there, and right-wing media is certainly all over it, too, because from what looking at their coverage of everything, it's all the
environmentalists' fault.
Yeah, it's all those progressives. What do you have on that? I'm just kind of curious, how is it being covered outside of the usual suspects?
Okay, so there's an online publication called, it was on the Google News feed, and it was picked up by a number of other news agencies. The site is called The Center Square. Now, I've never heard of it. Have you ever heard of that before?
No,
never.
It's just one of those
One of those chum boxes.
And what is this miscellaneous alleged news site's take on this?
Well, it was a pretty good take, except they left out an important part of the story. And there was this writer who is a freelance right-wing writer. He's written for a number of right-wing publications like The Epoch Times, The Daily Caller, you know, that kind of thing. So he gave a pretty good rundown of what happened on the pier, that the waves undermined the pier and the pilings and the, you know, the 150 feet fell off and all that.
But then he
blamed it on a lawsuit by environmentalists for delaying the strengthening of the pier, the wharf.
And that's a variation of that was in a few. The Chronicle had a same sort of story saying, well, there were plans afoot, but the interesting twist is, of course, what was left out?
All right, so
of both the right-wing news site and the San Francisco Chronicle.
So, you know, there are a couple of legitimate, good, solid news sites here in town, and I think we should do a shout out to one of them, Santa Cruz Local, who's they've done a number of stories on this over the years. There was a delay about the wharf because of these legal threats, but those threats don't exist any longer, and the reason for the delay, the reason for the legal action was because the original plan to reconstruct the wharf had this giant building. They called it a landmark building. I don't know, landmark for what, but a really large four-story building at the very end of the wharf.
A four-story building that would have been sitting at the last 100 feet of the...
Yes.
So that four-story building would probably be in Capitola by now.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, part of it was to replace all the pilings and all that. So the point is, though, that the lawsuit was finally adjudicated in court, and a judge rejected the city's plan to put that big building down there, partly for aesthetic reasons, which is really interesting considering the argument we're having over aesthetics now with the new construction going on in
Santa
Cruz.
Was there a time when there were progressives in Santa Cruz that could oppose things for aesthetic reasons? He said, looking at the Sentinel's picture of the library and Stalinist gift shop construction that I just saw.
Different rules apply in those cases.
Oh, yes.
Right. But yes, there was a time that was Bruce Bratton's time, unfortunately, and he's passed. But
he's passed. But his memory and spirit is still firmly with What a Week.
Yeah.
Because, the story that I'm really been obsessing on, and we will be continuing to obsess on it. The library got, $111 million in funding. So it's a green light to build. Goodbye trees, goodbye farmers market, hello library, and looming over it. If you look at the, and this is a, if you get the Sentinel, go online and look at the picture of this thing. If you look at the architecture, again, hate to obsess
Stalinist,
about this.
Stalinist,
brutalist. But my big question, and Tony, you're more well-informed. It's possible to be less well-informed than me about such things as this. The ones that they've finished, the Stalinist blocks that are already up and running, what's the occupancy there? How many people have moved in? What are they charging for rent? And is there any sign that the ones that they've built are alleviating the problem that they're allegedly supposed to alleviate?
Well, first of all, the occupancy rate is low right now because so many apartments are coming online so quickly. Also, the prices are high, yes.
What, they're supposed to be affordable?
The market rate prices are high, and that means that the affordable rate is also high. So, we're looking at, expensive housing. We're looking at, $3,000 for a studio, $4,000 or more for a one or two bedroom. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Well, can I throw out a far-fetched idea?
Go ahead.
Let's say before they ram through and build more of these, I'm looking at you, Workbench, the king of Stalinist brutalist architecture, and ram these things through. Shouldn't they look at how the ones they've already rammed through are working and factor those calculations in before they allow more of them to be built?
Well, that's a good observation. In fact, that question came up in front of the Santa Cruz City Council some time ago, several months ago, and the City Council decided, no, they're not going to enact any rules to require these building owners to report what their occupancy is, where the tenants are coming from, and whether those tenants are working in Santa Cruz County, which was the whole idea to build affordable housing
for local
residents. So
no accountability then? No receipts are being kept then?
Well, the city's idea, City Council's idea, was that that should be up to the building owners.
Oh, well, that's good then. So I'm sure the developers who put these things in using the false flag of affordable housing, we're doing a service to the community, will be more than happy to publish the receipts that show high rents, lack of occupancy, and cars being parked up on sidewalks because they don't have any parking.
And lack of any aesthetics.
Yeah, well, so the question is, I guess, is there anything that the spirit of Bruce Bratton looking over my shoulder. What can we, the citizenry of Santa Cruz, do to perhaps suggest to, say, go to City Council and say, you know what, before, why don't we put the burden on Workbench? Why don't they work up a case study on the buildings that have already been done, exchange the secret developer handshake, access the real records, and report back on how the ones they've built are doing. Put it on the developers who want the new ones to go to the developers who built the old ones. And you know what, if it turns out 100% occupancy, everything that they promised is being delivered, well, I'm still not happy about the architecture, but at least there is some reason for these monstrosities to be built.
And the city's response is they are They are the state law usurps any local authority.
I mean, that John Laird told us in this very studio could be up for reconsideration, and that he would look into it in Sacramento.
He has said that in this in the coming session, he is going to look at an exemption for cities and locales that have already met their housing promises. Santa Cruz City and the county and the other cities in Santa Cruz are among that group. So this would be up to Laird and the state legislature to move forward on this. Now, he told us this, you know, election night on the air, live, sitting in our studio.
We have the tape, folks.
And I have no reason to believe he will not do what he can to get this done.
And so, if you want to track this stuff, folks, the Facebook page is Santa Cruz Against Runaway Development, and the very title of the news group suggests that they're not on the side of these things. So read everything else too to form an informed opinion. You know, don't just read a advocate site. Because, God forbid, you form a strong opinion. But where there's smoke, there's fire. And this needs to be continued on. And as I say, with Bruce Bratton's passing, someone's got to pick up the torch. And when Chris Krohn sat in with us, I think our last show, he certainly did not.
Oh, you were both frothing at the mouth.
Frothing at the mouth here. In Santa Cruz, looping this back to the wharf, Bruce Bratton stopped the Wilder 10,000, Wilder being obliterated with 10,000 homes, the nuclear power plant in Davenport, that would have worked out, and we stopped the four-story building at the end of the pier. So, you know, we want that Santa Cruz to, at the very least, take a hard look.
Those activists are still around. Gary Patton is still here. He was a county supervisor for 20-plus years, an environmental lawyer, and he was responsible for saving Lighthouse Field, the attorney who worked with the local group, the West Side group, to save that. So, yeah, the activists are there. The people who are concerned about this are there. Unfortunately, they're not on the city council currently.
Yes, well, city council, we're coming for
which
you
is
next.
Which is odd, because what is that phrase you use about Santa Cruz all the time, the People's Republic of Santa Cruz?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, did you have a pleasant Christmas?
I did, you know, but I had an extra pleasant Christmas yesterday. I stopped by, wait for it, speaking of good news about Santa Cruz development, or good and bad news, the Bigfoot Museum.
Oh, yes.
Of which the show is if somebody says, God, you guys just do endlessly bitch about everything. Is there anything you like? Yes, the Bigfoot Museum and Michael Rupp, who runs it. I talked to Michael. Bad news for him is he has been unable to sell it. That's a very unique, small property, and we should have an ID council of what to do. We had great plans for how we could revamp the Bigfoot Museum, thanks to Arlie Proctor, our theme park consultant.
But why don't we jack it up and move it down to the end of the wharf?
There. Okay, see, Tony, you know, you're
thinking. I'm always thinking.
Yeah, boy, you're really getting it together. But Michael did say his collection of Bigfoot stuff has a buyer. There's a Bigfoot Museum in Portland. Mm-hmm. So his lovingly assembled collection of plaster casts and Bigfoot paraphernalia, all the cool stuff in the museum has a home. His library, though, of Bigfoot books does not. And I was eyeing that library because that is a lovingly assembled, the definitive Bigfoot library. Just throwing this out, you know, if there's $111 million that's being pledged revamp the library in Santa Cruz, maybe some of that money could go to buy the entire Bigfoot library of Michael Rupp and put it in the appropriate display.
Have a Michael Rupp wing.
Or a Michael Rupp bookshelf, you know, or a glass display case that has all of his Bigfoot books.
That's right.
How cool would that be,
folks?
With
that big wooden sculpture of Bigfoot. Now, what about the Bigfoot Museum in Oregon, though? Is it the same Bigfoot that was stomping around Santa Cruz, or did he move up to Oregon, you know, to take in the grunge movement there for a time?
I think he was. Yeah, he was an early he was
early
on his
adopter.
Way to Seattle to see, and then after Kurt Cobain's passing, he headed
what's
back
the point?
Down south.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we do things we do like. We do like good music and good music that has just come out and is. I played the best of 2024, but this stuff hadn't come out yet. Believe it or not, I hadn't gotten it. So there's a song that from an Amy Spies. Amy Spies, I think that's how you pronounce it. S with a piece after it. So I'm going to go for Spies. Album called The American Dream, and in an astonishing coincidence, the song has the same title.
Kick the can to the sun. promise we hid in the back of that house on the corner of Old Shady View. July 4th before the second grade, a joker in the spokes and huffy handlebars. Bicentennial parade, Yankee Doodle Dandy and sparklers in the yard.
Technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity.
It's kind of funny when we started bashing Elon Musk a couple of years ago, and when we discovered Thrush, and then I started referring to him as the Blofeld of a comic evil billionaire. It is truly astonishing how fast the hyperbole has merged with the real guy. We started with, a couple years ago, saying, watch out for this guy, stop buying Teslas. And when he bought Twitter, we warned you what was going to happen to Twitter. But the acceleration of his toxicity is surprising.
And almost as fast as the acceleration of his wealth.
Well, we'll get into all of that. But somebody referred to it as the mega knight of the bong knives.
Wonk, wonk.
Sly Nazi reference there.
Yeah.
So Musk and the MAGA base are battling over immigration, where Musk wants to have, and his buddy, I keep forgetting his name, Vivek Very Smarmy.
No.
Am I getting it right? Is it
no,
Very Smarmy?
Not quite. No, no, it's Ramaswamy.
Not Very Smarmy.
Not Very Swarmy. No,
okay.
Ramaswamy.
It's going to be hard to get that out of me, that earwig out of my brain. Is basically faced off against Loomer, and Matt Gaetz over the fact that the technolords, the broligarchs, the members of the Nerd Reich want to keep the HNB program going, which allows them to, in essence, get indentured servants over smart people from other countries who basically sign away their lives and are allowed to come to the United States and work without any recourse. And if they don't like their jobs, they're sent back to wherever they came from. So for some very obvious reasons, Musk and very smarmy want to keep that going. But the hardcore MAGA base, who basically say anyone of a dusky color needs to be immediately deported, and we don't care whether you're legal or not or born here or not. Let's just cut to the chase, folks. These are extremely racist people. So, yeah, and what happened was Loomer went all over X, the bastion of free speech, according to Elon Musk, which he had taken over because he was a, quote, and this is his words, free speech absolutist. Tony, guess what happened when Loomer went out on X and criticized Elon Musk? You're never going to guess what happened.
The former X user, Loomer?
What, you mean the one who was flagged for violating rules against posting other people's private information and was bounced and taken off the social network by Elon Musk, that free speech adolescent?
The photons weren't even dry on the screen.
Yeah, well, that basically, so someone said, you know, speaking of, we're in a debate now who the real president is, but Trump has always been good at taking the pulse of his most deranged, frothing racist supporters. And what they want is not the techno-feudal empire that Elon wants to build. They want rank gutter racism and deporting everyone who isn't white. Guess who Trump will listen to? So the lamestream media, thank you, Sarah Palin, they're reporting this as divisions within the MAGAs. They're already fracturing. I'm not completely sure about that, but it certainly is. We started Welcome Back, My Friends, to the Show That Never Ends. And these are actual, speaking of evil billionaires, so these are actual, we're not making this up, folks, tweets. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to call them, from Elon Musk last week. There is a large graveyard filled with my enemies. I do not wish to add to it, but will if given no choice. Those who pick fights with me do so at their own peril, but maybe this is their lucky day.
So was he trying to be funny? I mean, was he writing a joke?
No, that was a post, but that was from November of 2023. That was from a year ago. Mm-hmm. So that was from a year ago. But this is from last night, 8:22 p.m., 12/27/24. The reason I'm in America, along with so many critical people who built SpaceX, Tesla, and hundreds of other companies that make America strong, is because of H-1B. This is the money, as they say, the money shot. This is Musk from last night. Take a big step back and F yourself in the face. I will go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend.
No, there he was making a joke, obviously.
Yes, right? Clearly making a joke.
No, well, it was very funny.
And Steve Bannon, speaking of frothing at the mouth right-winger, who's firmly in the Loomer Gates, he wrote, responded to this tweet saying, someone please notify Child Protective Services. We need to do a wellness check on this toddler.
And then he included the post by Musk. Yeah,
then he included the post. Well, that's what they do. So that's what, and there's more folks that just broke today that our favorite neo-Nazi is actually getting even closer to the real thing. He wrote an editorial in a major German newspaper supporting the AfD, the far-right German political party, Alternative for Germany, Uber Alles. And when they published it, the woman who ran the editorial page quit, promptly resigned. Sound familiar there, LA Times? So Musk is basically putting his pedal to the metal and outright supporting actual neo-Nazi organizations, wait for it, in Germany. So, you know, where do you go with that? I mean, how can you parody that? And even how can you give a warning to that? We tried, folks. We tried.
The newspaper did post a response right under Musk's commentary. And the newspaper said, Musk's diagnosis is correct, but his therapeutic approach that only the AfD can save Germany is totally, fatally false.
Yes, and the AfD's desire, among other things, is to leave the European Union and, wait for it, seek allies with Russia and appease China. Does this sound familiar, folks? Looking at 1939 or 1940, and we have a movement called America First. That's the slogan that Trump and J.D. Vance ran on, America First. I mean, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And speaking of bloated this is sort of nostalgia. This is like early 2000s, late 90s nostalgia. Walmart, remember them? If you look up the list of evil billionaires, Walmart, the Walmart family are kind of down the food chain. There's four of them, and they're, each one of them are worth around $80, $85 billion. So if you multiply the four Walmart heirs, you get up to Musk country as far as fortunes. Everyone sort of suspected that Walmart was a bad thing. When they muscled their way into small America towns, they would devastate the downtown, throw people out of work, destroy the character of the towns, create a gaping hole in the community that, let's face it, opiates and fentanyl might fill. Hate to be so bleak here. Now the statistics that prove it's true, that they did, they've done analysis of what happens when a Walmart moves, and surprise and surprise, low-income, young, and less educated workers suffer the most. Once it becomes a major employer, they call it monopsony power over workers. Just as Monopoly describes a company that can afford to charge prices, the other describes a company that can afford to pay low wages because workers have so few options. So they can basically lowball their workers because there's no other jobs in town because, wait for it, Walmart forced them out.
So monopsopy? Monopsopy?
Yeah, a new word here, folks. Mm. We're for what a week. So this is a new study. This was just written up in The Atlantic last week. I'm not making this done. But, Tony, there's some good news with Costco.
There's always good news in Costco.
The KSQD World Headquarters.
$4.95 chickens.
KSQD World Headquarters is not as a stone's throw, as they say, from the Santa Cruz Costco, which...
$1.50 hot dogs.
So what did Costco do last week when the anti-DEI people came a-knocking?
Well, they fought back. They pushed back. And Costco said, Costco board has considered the proposal about DEI and, you know, and they decided that they're going to commit to an enterprise rooted in respect and inclusion, and that's appropriate and necessary. The statement from the board said, our success at Costco has been built on service to our critical stakeholders, employers, members, and suppliers. Our efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion follow our code of ethics.
And the board noted that they want their over 300,000 employees to, quote, feel valued and respected. And to feel valued and respected, DEI works for them. So good on Costco. There is an alternative here. So, Tony, I know you. I saw you missed the show. You say you were stumbling around in your bathrobe yesterday, but I know you were heading up to Cottonwood, California.
Cottonwood, Shasta County. Yep.
What were you going up to Cottonwood, California looking for?
Well, I was heading to the Circle K out there on Ronda Road, just off I-5 in Cottonwood. That's a little bit south of Reading. And I was going to buy one of those lottery tickets. And I bought it. I bought the ticket with the winning number, but I can't find it. I had it around here someplace. You didn't happen to see it, did you?
Well, if you find that ticket, it's worth $1.22 billion. Yes, Friday night, some lucky person, and I think, Tony, you're bluffing. I think, no, you got the ticket before the ticket that worked. And Tony, no, I'm seeing what you cannot Sharpie in the winning numbers onto a lottery ticket.
Well, hey, if Trump can Sharpie in a typhoon, I can Sharpie in a number.
But, yeah, someone is going to get $1.22 billion. So the Sunshine Food and Gas, Cottonwood, California. I don't know where that is. It's
south of, it's on I-5, south of Reading.
South of Reading, wow.
Yeah.
So there
Shasta
we are.
County.
Lucky, lucky person. So, well, we're going to come back, play a little bit more music. Where do you go from Musk? You want to clear the air. This is, again, a new record, a new album by Robert Vincent called Barriers, and a song that's eerily appropriate here to what we're all experiencing, and it's called Burden. You are listening to What a Week on KSQD. I'm Eric Nelson.
And I'm Tony Russomano.
And we'll be back. We're going to go deep into another fun subject, AI. And we're going to hear a new phrase, which is, write it down, folks. Metabolic technology. What is metabolic technology, you ask? Well, when we come back after this little musical interlude, we'll tell you all about it.
On paper, we were ready. Knees, they were held steady. Only sins we left behind. With a right or wrong in judgment, we put God before our conscience and hope that one day He would understand.
KSQD is proud to partner with Santa Cruz Gifts, a community giving fund that supports 63 nonprofits, including K-Squid. Donations to K-Squid on their giving site qualify us for matching funds. Your gift to K-Squid at Santa Cruz Gives will help us with outreach and training to bring new citizen journalists to the air, including youth, seniors, farm workers, and others who have been underserved. Just click on santacruzgives.org/KSQD and we'll thank you on the air. Donations of $100 or more can receive a K-Squid hat or t-shirt. Support K-Squid and support community. That's santacruzgives.org/KSQD.
And the great thing about KSQD is Santa Cruz without borders. We export the weird everywhere. Tony, I'm looking. We have a little online listener location. So Someone's actually listening in Chicago, Illinois, but much in Meadville, Pennsylvania. But much more troubling, or maybe it's good news, Washington, District of Columbia. There is someone listening to...
Oh, they're always listening. They're always listening.
I always assumed it was a direct pipeline to the Biden White House. And, if they'd only listened to us, we would be having a very different show today.
Pete Buttigieg, if you're listening, call the station.
Yeah, call the station. So we promised to talk about AI and metabolic technology, but a great definition of AI. And we'll talk a little bit about the crapization of culture. I can't say the real work, so I have to use the euphemism crap instead of the S word, but we'll be talking about that. But the underlying purpose of AI is to allow wealth to access skill while removing from the skilled the ability to access wealth. One more time. That is a great one. The underlying purpose of AI is to allow wealth to access skill while removing from the skilled the ability to access wealth. If I could pronounce the word access, I'd be really ahead. Maybe AI could do that better. So metabolic technology, there's an article that came out, I think, in The Guardian, talking about what this technology is doing besides annoying everybody. It's also pushing the electric grids beyond their capacity. And they refer to generative AI is fundamentally a metabolic technology that burns electricity and evaporates water at an exponential rate to keep the ingestion, digestion, and production of data going. So imagine this huge amorphous creature that's pulling power and devouring the power grids in the earth and generating emissions that are
denuding,
losing our 100 feet of our pier. Let's put it all, think locally, act globally.
Yeah, and what AI is systems doing. Are becoming more and more complex.
And they're becoming more and more complex. But a good bit of information, though, this is in The Guardian today, and we recommend The Guardian as a place to do. The British-Canadian computer scientist, often touted as the godfather of AI, has shortened the odds, not lengthened, shortened the odds of AI wiping out humanity over the next three decades. So before he said there was a 10%, a 1 in 10 chance of AI triggering a catastrophic outcome for humanity, he was asked on the BBC's Radio 4 show yesterday if he had changed his opinion, and he said, yeah, I have. Now it's up to 10 to 20%. So it could be in 5 chance within the next 30 years.
We ought to keep track of that. Like the Society of Nuclear Engineers had the doomsday clock, and they pushed the minute hand up to like 2 minutes before midnight. I got 2 minutes before we're all annihilated.
Well, but there's a great essay by one Ed Citron. Ed as in Ed, as in Mr. Ed, Wilbur him. And Z-I-T-R-O-N. If you go look, go to the Google and look, search the term, and I love this phrase, rot economy. And it's an essay on what Cory Doctorow referred to as the crapification theory, which is basically that all apps, all computer technology, all the stuff that we're now not just hooked on, it's essential for our lives. The technology and interfaces are getting exponentially worse. They're getting harder to do simple things. You're asked to fill out, those things. Please agree to everything. Click here before you proceed further. This article describes him getting an Acer computer, just a basic off-the-shelf good computer, and it took him an hour just to get through all of the menus to power the thing up. And then the thing was still sluggish and crappy.
Well, you know what? This actually happened, Eric. It's funny you're talking about this. I wanted to hear that song you were playing. I couldn't because I have this new iPhone, and I was trying to figure out how to mute the damn thing. It used to be you had a little slide switch that went up and down, and a little orange thing that said it's muted. Now it's a push button, but you can't tell what that push button does. You're hitting the push button, nothing happens.
Okay, well, Gramps. That's a different thing. And I can see. I know you're.
There's another button. I don't know what that button does.
You're looking at your iPhone the way that the ape in 2001 regarded the monolith was
It's unnecessarily complex. And then I actually Googled the instructions. Swipe left on the action button. Where the hell is the action button?
Well, no, it's
true.
How
do I swipe left on a button?
Again, in first world problems that we have absolutely no right to criticize, but of course that is the mandate and franchise of What a Week. Silence unknown callers. Wonderful little switch in an iPhone that enables you to basically knock 90% of spam calls out. It gets you basically throw that switch and the phone will immediately not answer and not bother you with the spam calls. You used to be able to just go into the general settings, general, boom, there it was. Click and you're in. Now it's probably, I think it's 4 or 5 clicks in to get there.
That's the same thing.
And these are little things, but when they mount up and, Corey's point, Corey, who coined the phrase in crapification, and he didn't use the word crap, I want to be clear, he described the 3 stages of decline. Mm-hmm. Tony, do you have those 3 stages of decline?
Number 1, platforms are good to their users. Then they abuse their users to make things better for their business customers. Finally, they abuse those business customers to claw back all the value for themselves. But, you know, hey, I read that quote and I remembered something. I actually have this thing cut out. It's an old Gilbert cartoon, and it's Dogbert coming up with a company motto. And the last caption in the cartoon is, "We abuse our employees and pass the savings on to you."
Well, I hate to say, Scott Adams, a.k.a. Dilbert, has become an absolute frothing at the mouth.
He has.
Soul mega head. So, but I do have an autographed Dilbert cartoon somewhere in deep storage he gave to me once. So, but I do have to heighten, if we're using Dilbert as a source, we should, the man has in fact lost his mind.
Yeah,
and in not unrelated news, and this is where we try to tie everything back, and this is very depressing, homelessness in the United States. This is, again, I think this came out yesterday, 18.1% increase. Now there's 770,000 homeless individuals in the United States. Family homelessness has spiked by 40%, particularly in cities that saw larger waves of migrants, like Denver, Chicago, and New York City. And 150,000 children are homeless on any given night in 2024, a 33% increase from 2023. At the same time that AI is wiping jobs out, and the incoming administration, I will not mention his name until I absolutely have to, is basically kind of...
What can we do about it? What can one person do about it, Eric?
Well, this is an interesting news. The statistic came out yesterday, and Barron's figured this out, and somebody checked the math this morning before saying this on the radio. Elon Musk, since the election, since November 5th, I repeat, since the election, his wealth has increased by $200 billion from November 5th to December 20th.
Now, that's not total of what he's worth.
No.
That's how much it's increased.
Increased, which means that according to the new stats, the homeless stats, that Musk could give $250,000 to every homeless person in the U.S. and would still be as rich as he was the night before the election.
So I guess one person can make a difference.
Yeah, well, there's a quote here that in a book called Morgan Housel, The Psychology of Money. And really, we circle back here. Columnist in the New York Times, Jamel Bouie, I think is how you pronounce it, talking about this passion for wealth and the billionaire obsession. He says, "My armchair psychological diagnosis is that the drive to accumulate as much wealth as possible eats away at the drive for self-improvement or the internal desire to cultivate any skills or tastes." These people build huge mounds of treasure and then essentially just sit around looking at it empty, which is pretty much a good phrase.
There's a quote from a book, The Psychology of Money, by Morgan Housel.
Ooh, and it mentions, names drop two of my favorite people. Do go on, Tony.
Here's the quote. "At a party given by a billionaire on Shelter Island, Kurt Vonnegut informs his pal, Joseph Heller, that their host, a hedge fund manager, had made more money in a single day than Heller had earned from his wildly popular novel Catch-22 over its whole history. Heller responds, "Yeah, but I have something he will never have. Enough." Enough.
Pretty much nails it. A big story here. Well, we're going to, maybe play a little, we haven't done politics yet. I'd like to play a little more music. This is our last chance to play music. And after that little depressing interlude, I think this is a song from an album and a song by Dwight Yoakam, and it's called Brighter Days. I think one thing we can hope for in 2025 is we're certainly not, the odds are against a lot of brighter days. We got to find them where we can, right? So we'll be back, and yes, we will get a little bit into topic A, which is, I guess what they'd say, as Private Ryan would refer to as incoming.
Brighter days are up ahead. Brighter days, that's what you said the first time you ever spoke to me. Brighter days are bound to come. Around each corner shines a sun, just waiting there for both of us to see. Brighter days are what you take too long. With brighter days, the clouds move on, then leave us off one light that sets us free.
Brighter days are bound to come. Around each corner shines a sun, just waiting there for both of us to see. That promise made, every step we take, lead where the future beams. Sweet fortune cookie dream. Said the first time you ever spoke to me. Oh, brighter days are bound to come. Around each corner shines a sun, just waiting there for both of us to see. Stop at one till a thousand million shadows jump up and flee.
And flee.
Brighter days are bound to come. Around each corner shines a sun, just waiting there for both of us to see. Brighter days are what you promised me. Days up ahead, brighter days, that's what you said the first time you ever spoke to me. Brighter days are bound to come. Around each corner shines the sun, just waiting there for both of us to see.
Dwight Yoakam, Brighter Days. Well,
what's oh, that? Yeah, boy. What's twanging, that? Twanging there,
yeah,
pal.
Yeah, you had a little musical outrelude there, you sly boots, Dwight, you. So, well, let's get into the top. Well, we can't not mention that Matt Gaetz, the Gaetz Report came out finally.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, he's already taken a job. I don't think he's a host for Newsmax, but he's already a primetime host of another right-wing outlet.
That's right.
And the speculation is, despite a report that mentions the words prostitution, statutory rape, illicit drug use, and special favors and obstructions of Congress, that's considered a feature, not a bug, and the guy's got a gig. But Paul Rudnick has commented on that and these magic words, prostitution, statutory rape, illicit drug use, special favors, and obstruction of Congress, which according to Rudnick can also be found in
Don Jr.'s letter to Santa,
a post-it on Pete Hegseth's bathroom mirror,
a children's book by Giuliani,
perhaps my favorite, Lauren Boebert's Dream Journal.
Oh, no offense, Catherine.
Yes, no offense, Catherine. We don't want to mention your fine show and Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz in the same sweep, but what the hell. So Democrats in disarray. Remember, we stopped doing that a while back. I don't know why.
But you know, it's like
because the Democrats seemed relatively in array.
Yeah,
there
but we need to do it towards the end of the show. It's like those, you know, sports section or the funny pages in the old newspapers. You know, you save the entertainment for the last.
Well, on topic A, you know, we've not mentioned the Mango Mussolini's actual given Christian name once. See if we can make it through the whole hour. I'm less obsessed and crazy about that because the phrase obsessed and crazy also applies pretty much to the entire incoming administration. It's the what are we going to do about it part.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
someone wrote about this, and I think this is a good rhetorical question du jour here. Imagine a young person who voted for the first time this year believing in Kamala Harris that, quote, when we fight, we win. and tell me how that matches up with the Democratic Party's rhetoric and actions following the election. And tell me why that person should trust the party going forward.
Well, tell me what the farmers are going to be thinking when Trump reneges on all of his campaign promises.
But that, again, does not that is about them and about those voters. It's not about what the Democrats are doing as an opposition
party. Go on.
And just remember when what happened after the riot, you know, after January 6th, basically Trump leaves town and the campaign for reelection begins. A 365-day-a-year campaign where they declared total war on everything the Democrats were doing. Mm-hmm. What happened when Obama was elected in 2008? McConnell took all of the Republicans aside in the Senate and said, our mission is to obstruct every single thing this guy is doing. And he wanted people to know he said it. What are our Democrats doing right now, other than Nancy Pelosi kneecapping AOC for the Means Committee and putting a 74-year-old, barely living, Weekend at Bernie's guy in, even though AOC worked some powerful voodoo on Nancy, and I do hope she's recovering, didn't stop it.
Well, I'll tell you what Chuck Schumer did. He got more of Biden's nominees appointed to federal courts than Trump did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because he realized that he didn't have the majority in the Senate. He couldn't get the votes to get legislation passed. So he kind of reframed his to-do list to get as many judges, federal judges, as possible on the bench. And he accomplished that.
And how's the Sonia Sotomayor stepping down and putting in a 27-year-old Supreme Court radical in? How did that work out? How did topic one, you know, which is the fact that Trump has zero mandate. I mean, Trump, and this is real interesting figures here. Let's get this just jump down here. And this is brand new stuff. Of the 244 million voting eligible population, 31.5 voted for Trump, 30.6 voted for Harris, 37.7 did not vote at all. Okay, so if did not vote had been a presidential candidate, they would have beaten Trump by 9 million votes in the popular votes.
None of the above takes it again.
Yeah, takes it again. And they would have won 21 states, earning just 5 less than it would have taken to win the presidency. And if we want to talk about the Electoral College, the election was decided by 229,000 votes out of the 155 million cast nationally.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, it's great that Schumer got some more judges appointed, but the fact that this isn't like every single statement begins with Trump as the least popular president in American history repeatedly, these margins being done, chipping away at this idiotic insanity of him having a, quote, mandate. I mean, where are those points? Where's the propaganda? Where's the war on the Republican Party coming from the Democrats? I'm not talking about Schumer and inside, ramming through some federal judges. That's really going to change hearts and minds, Tony. You know, where's inspiring leadership, I guess? And these are all rhetorical questions. We don't have it. There is no inspiring leadership right now. Is there going to be? We can control this. We have that power. We can't stop he who shall not be named from oozing into office and Musk and all the depredations they're going to do. But couldn't we form an effective opposition party that actually is inspiring and organized? As I've said before, where's our De Gaulle? You know, when the Nazis took over, and fairly good analogy, thank you, Elon Musk, in your statement to the German press, when the Nazis marched into Paris, De Gaulle decamped to London and said, I don't accept it. I'm France. France exists. It's with me, and we're coming back. Where's our De Gaulle?
Well, I don't know. Ellen DeGeneres is going to England.
But that's one of the few bright sides. You know, okay, right. We said, you know, every cloud has a... So if you haven't been listening to What a Week, Ellen DeGeneres has moved. She's the one. She's moving to England, and she says she's not coming back. So, okay, every cloud does have a silver lining there. But... yeah, I mean, these are the things that I'm worrying about. And there's another Rudnick here on the other side here. I have to bring this up. Cardinal Dolan, did you read that?
Yeah.
It said, quote, Trump takes his Christian faith seriously. Mm-hmm. What did Rudnick complete the sentence with?
Which is why, just like Jesus, he consorts with harlots and moneylenders such as Melania and Elon. He's constantly reading the Bible looking for his name. Why, he's as honest and devout as I am, and we both enjoy paying people for their silence.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Well, okay, we want to remind folks that, you know, we have a news source. We're big Blue Sky fans here at What a Week. And if you go to Blue Sky, if you have an account, search the magic letters WAW space KSQD. Not too tough to remember, Tony. Even you can.
WAW space.
Okay, see, when you're fumbling at your iPhone looking for the on button, Tony, you can remember WAWKSQD. But you go there and you see us and just click on the starter pack and you can follow 100 plus news sources that we follow. And then if you don't like them, delete them. But at least you're immediately in the game and surrounded by this nutrient bath of good information. And it's important to you can't be well informed unless you're informed well. I've heard that somewhere. But Tony, there's some sad news here. Well, you know, I always value the trades. Trades, and this is about Bert the Giant Crocodile, featured, and we all know who Bert the Giant Crocodile. He was featured in that 1986 classic Crocodile Dundee.
Sure. Yeah. And Paul Hogan. Right.
Yeah, Paul Hogan. But it's sad to say, Bert has shuffled off this mortal coil. 90
well,
years
what they
old.
Do, the crocodile 90, shuffle.
Bert was 90 years old, and Bert. Had,
are you kidding me? You serious? 90. A 90-year-old crocodile?
Yeah, Bert was in the place, you know, the farm up, and you know that farm where they send the animals in upstate New York.
Well, yeah,
Bert
the,
was in
the right the Australian, motion picture home for crocodiles.
He was in Crocosaurus Cove, and
Crocosaurus
Cove shared an Instagram photo, and the line was, Bert passed away peacefully over the weekend, making the end of an incredible era. Oh. Bert was truly one of a kind. He wasn't just a crocodile. He was a force of nature and a reminder of the power and majesty of these incredible creatures.
Oh, that's nice.
And I like the comments, Tony. Why don't we, the comments in Deadline Hollywood from some Hollywood types about Bert's passing.
Tremendous reptilian actor, and I never once believed the gay rumors.
Bert was a performer who gave his heart to the craft of acting. But I'll remember him most as a sensitive and caring lover.
Gone too soon. And they say Tarantino was working on a comeback vehicle for him.
Well, that's it, folks. You can't follow anything. Bert the crocodile. This has been another thrill-packed edition of What a Week. And the good news is we'll be back in the new year. There'll be much to report on. We've kind of accomplished, covered a lot of ground here, from Elon Musk to a 90-year-old 90-year-old crocodile.
And Bigfoot.
And Bigfoot, yes. All right. Well, I think we don't take requests or dedications on What a Week, but, you know, we got to put a song out
there. That's why we're still on the air.
Yeah, that's why. But we do got to put a song out for old Bert. I'm Eric Nelson.
I'm Tony Russomano.
And Bert, we hardly knew ye.
Walking with another man today. Well, I saw my baby walking with another man today. When I asked her what's the matter, this is what I heard her say. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. Can't you see you're in my way now? Don't you know you cramp my style? When I thought of what you told me, you nearly made me lose my head. When I thought of what you told me, you nearly made me lose my head. But the next time that I saw her, then I told her what she said. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. You know you cramp my style. She said, I'm sorry, pretty daddy. You know my love is just for you. She said, I'm sorry, pretty daddy.
forgive me and say you still love me true. I said, wait a minute, Gator, I know you meant it just to play. I said, wait a minute, Gator, I know you meant it just to play. Don't you know you really hurt me? This is all I have to say. See you later, alligator. You know you're in my way now. Don't you know you cramp my style?